Joining me on the Neil Wilkins podcast today is Kieran James. Kieran is the founder and CEO of Wonderful. And this is a company that he started up, which is disrupting, and I think that should be a fair word to say, disrupting the open banking sector, because it hasn't always been this way, but we have technology now that can do true disruption. And we're going to hear a lot about Wonderful, which is a company doing some really great things, not just for the charity sector, which it focuses in on, but for actually all of us in terms of a mindset and way of thinking about how we can process money going forward. So welcome to the podcast, Kieran.
Thank you very much, Neil. It's great to be here. My pleasure.
Yeah, I'm always on the lookout for both people like you, but also organizations like yours, because I think they are, and I use that word disruption quite kind of freely there, because I think the world needs it right now. I think the old systems and the old models feel so outdated. And I think just fresh new thinking and, you know, embracing all the emerging technologies, if we can put those two things together, it's a pretty potent mix, isn't it?
Completely, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting, we'll get into the details a little bit on open banking in due course, but chatting to my daughter about this very recently, you know, we're using credit cards for payments that were introduced in the UK pretty much when I was. So, you know, approaching 60 years ago now, and we live in a completely different world than we did when cards were introduced. So, yeah, that kind of change is well overdue. I think we've all come to rely on an outdated technology.
Before we get into that detail that you said, because I want to bring a lot of value to those listening, because I think there's a great call to action here in going exploring Wonderful, and that's such a great name. I want to come on to how you found that one as well. But I mean, a couple of sort of backward steps. I mean, I always, well, not always, but often ask the question of any guests that I talk to. Kind of the backstory, how did you find your way into this? Because you have quite an eclectic background, don't you? And I've obviously done my research to find out a little bit more about you, and it isn't just banking, is it?
No, it's quite an odd one. I mean, I can go back to 1998 when it started, but actually I'll leap forward a little bit first, because Wonderful kicked off in 2016. I mentioned my age briefly at the start there, but 2016 was my 50th birthday, and it was also our 25th wedding anniversary. It was a couple of the kids had significant birthdays. I think we had a 21st and an 18th. So we were thinking we wanted to mark the year by doing something, you know, a little bit different. I'd done a bit of running over many, many years and decided that I'd do my marking of that year by running the New York Marathon. And as we were approaching 2016 and thinking, well, we'll do this, that's at the back end of the year, I then had this harebrained idea to kind of build the fundraising platform as well. And the reason for that was that as I started to think about the race, I was thinking back to when I'd previously done this and just a little frustrated by the amount of money that gets lost from that fundraising process. So that was the real motivation. If we can do this, can we somehow ensure that the charities get every single penny from that fundraising effort? So that was really how we got started. At the time, I was running a telecoms business, and my engineers in that business were really, really talented and also really great people. So I went into the office with this notion of let's build this platform, sat them down and said, here's a thing. Do you fancy giving up your coffee breaks and lunch hours and weekends, and we'll see whether we can do it? And actually, their appetite for it was really strong. I think they were kind of quite motivated by the sense that is an opportunity for me to give back during my working day. So that was the initial motivation.
It's interesting how these kind of pathways kind of open up, isn't it? I mean, was kind of, you know, the tech side of things always kind of part of your kind of makeup? I guess, you know, being a sort of a founder, entrepreneur, and kind of really thought maker in lots of ways. I mean, I'm guessing this was quite a natural kind of thing for you to kind of be discovering, you know, these opportunities just in terms of a mindset at the time.
By this stage, it was very much. I started my career going back to finishing university in a trade association in London, which really I was doing that job because my real passion was playing the drums. And so headed off to London to play the drums in a band, but obviously needed to pay the rent. So I got a job in a trade association, did that for 4 or 5 years, met my wife, first child starts to come along and you think, actually, I probably could do with a bit more stability than hoping for the best with bashing drums. So we ended up at that point heading north, and I did a teacher training qualification and went and taught in high schools for a while. So it's been a very circuitous journey into where I am now. But along the way, what happened in terms of the first business was I moved from the high school in the northeast, actually to the Middle East, and ended up running a training institute in the Sultanate of Oman. We were there for period of time, and then essentially the funding stopped for that institute. To all intents and purposes, that was it. And I was out on my ear back in the UK thinking, what can I do next? Just prior to coming back, that training institute asked me to look at marketing. And what they suggested is putting together a PDF. And this was probably 97, 98. So the internet was just really starting to emerge. And I had the idea of, well, if, you know, we're going to do some marketing and you're looking across a number of countries in the Middle East to grow the institute, then perhaps the internet's the way to go. So pretty much prior to leaving and heading back to the UK, I'd started doing a little bit of web design. Got back to the UK, essentially out of work, looking for a job, and thought, maybe this is the opportunity now to do my own thing. You know, this has arisen. I've learned a little bit of HTML. I'm sure it was pretty rudimentary in terms of certainly what people are doing these days with web development. But that was the starting point. I went off to the bank and convinced them that they should give me a loan to buy an Apple Mac computer. And off I went, you know, building my first site and looking for my first web design customer. Mm-hmm. And from there, it's been, you know, that was quite intensive. A lot of these design type jobs are. So it can be a long time from starting that work to getting paid, because you've got that design process sitting in the middle with the client going, oh, can you move this a little bit here? Can you change the color there? So what occurred to me during that journey was I'd also partnered with a business that was doing domain name registration. We needed domain names for all of the customers we're developing websites for. And it just struck me that that whole process was much simpler. You know, someone chose their domain name, they registered it, you got paid. So there's none of this backwards and forwards waiting for a final decision and sign off, and then we might release your money. This seemed to be quite an automated process. So again, that was a bit of an epiphany for me. It was, if I can get into businesses that are highly automated, low touch, we can serve online. So we do a lot of integration work with whoever it might be, then that seems like quite a good model. So that was the first one of those that we did. Actually, thinking about that, it might not have been quite the first, because I think just ahead of that, again, when we were doing the web design business, we also started doing company formations. So I partnered with a guy who was doing company formations online. And I think it was 99 that we put the first online company formation agent live. So again, similar kind of thing, working a lot on that low touch, zero touch, if possible, automated process very, very early on in the internet.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? There feels like there's a bit of a pattern here of this kind of preference that Kieran has for simplifying things. There's something really kind of neat there. I'm quite a minimalist kind of thinker, if you like. I love to see clarity in very few things, rather than let's just add a load more features in, or let's just make things busy, or let's just add a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, you can see the background behind me here. It is very, very simple, because complexity really doesn't serve me. Do you find that similar kind of, I guess, ethos or preference yourself? Because it feels like stripping out the noise is actually, within the industry that you're in, is actually a really healthy thing to do.
Really, completely, yeah. So we've had really a couple of approaches to all of the businesses. It's a really straightforward approach. One is trying to be visible so people can find you easily. When they do, the process then of using your service should be really streamlined too. So I've done my Google search, I've landed on the web page. Now, our web page currently for the payments business, and it's an interesting challenge with the SEO guy, because you're saying it's basically one page, and we're saying, yeah, because that keeps it really simple. There are three or four concepts we want to get across with this payment solution. It's new technology, so we want to do that quickly. But we want to get those over to the point where the person can register without too much effort. And that's always been, whether it was, you know, company formations and bringing that business online from a very paper-based approach of sending documents in and waiting for documents to be returned, whether there was photocopies of, you know, company information at company's house. We just wanted to try and bring that all online and keep that process simple. I have to say, back in the day, it was certainly not as simple as it is now, where it was one long form, you know, online. So you were sitting down with your keyboard in front of you, expecting to be filling out a form for the next 10, 15 minutes, if you were lucky. So again, we don't have people's attention for quite that long now, but in 1999, that was a thing.
So kind of less is more, I guess, when you're sort of in fintech, which obviously we're going to move into in a minute in the conversation, because I want to find out much more about Wonderful. And I guess the kind of the ethos really is that less is more, because actually, if we can keep that journey, be it a business partner, be it a charity, be it a reseller or an agent, or be it a customer, an actual end user, as we might call it in marketing speak, you kind of need to balance that minimum kind of number of steps with the practicality of actually, we do still need you to go through some steps. Okay. Too many steps and it becomes onerous, but enough steps so we can capture data, do the transaction, and actually, you know, provide the value. So it's not like minimalism back to zero, because you've got to kind of do something. How do you kind of find that sort of happy balance? Because that feels like it's quite a tricky thing to do.
It's difficult. I heard the term recently, positive friction, which I think is a good way of describing this. If I'm signing up to have a company process transactions and deliver my customer payment into my bank account, then I'm probably more comfortable that there's some friction in that process, because I want there to be some diligence. So that's important. You know, if we're talking to app developers will be really keen to get people to download and start using the app instantly. And again, my analogy is often, yeah, but that's fine if you're downloading a game, because there's no friction required for that. We don't need to do any diligence on you to start playing Wordle or whatever it might be. That's absolutely fine. In the case where we're linking a bank account to transact those payments directly into the bank account, then you'll want to see that that's being done. So, yeah, it is a balance. It's a tricky one oftentimes, because it's such a brand new technology. So people are probably using it and not necessarily aware that they're using it. But if you're using it as a merchant or as a charity signing up to receive those payments, then we've got to go through those steps with you.
So let's get into this whole open banking thing. I think some of us have got, you know, if we're not in the industry, it might need a bit of description, but some of us have got a little bit of an idea that it's simple. It possibly takes certain players out of the process. And it would be nice to kind of get from your perspective a kind of a more general sort of overview as to what are we actually talking about here that's different to like a traditional banking setup.
Can I wind back to 2016 again briefly to introduce, you know, some of the challenges that we faced when we launched that free fundraising platform? Because that probably is quite a nice introduction to open banking in a roundabout way. So we introduced this platform, we launched it. The charities were initially a little skeptical of our motivations because it was completely free. So we had a bit of work to do there to convince them that we weren't up to no good and it was 100% philanthropic. That was challenging until a money saving expert came along and said, this is absolutely amazing. You know, you really should use this platform as a charity because every single penny goes to you as the charity. Floodgates opened and we quickly realized we created the classic success paradox. So we'd initially taken it upon ourselves to fund the first £1 million that went through the platform as the telecoms business. Now, that sounds like a lot of money. But the real hard cost of delivering that £1 million in terms of cash raised for charities was around the processing fees. Broadly speaking, £25,000 to £30,000 it would have cost us to process £1 million in donations. So we undertook to do that. Thankfully, after the money saving expert endorsed us, we got the cooperative bank came on as our main sponsor. So suddenly, you know, there's an organization with slightly deeper pockets than our small telecoms business, which was really encouraging. But what we found, and it had been predicted by many people who looked at this, you know, was that the more successful the platform, And we'd gone from it taking 18 months to bring on 100 charities to actually registering 100 in a day post Money Saving Expert. So suddenly the thing is exploding. We're going back constantly looking for more and more corporate sponsorship, be it the Co-op Bank, or we're trying to think about, you know, potential sponsors further down the line with deeper pockets. And that became a real challenge. Now, between that and open banking, COVID happened, and we ended up pausing that platform for a while because we just literally couldn't run both the telecoms business and then use its seconded staff to run the platform in the midst of a lockdown. Telecoms business was also exploding. Everyone's telephone conferencing like crazy, and we have a free conferencing service. So we paused the platform. Then what happened is I ended up making a donation to somebody who was having their head shaved during lockdown for charity. And that was my first encounter with open banking. So completely serendipitous, and probably about 5 or 6 weeks after we effectively closed this platform. And it was such a simple, straightforward, really frictionless process that I was kind of quite blown away. I didn't know what I'd just done, but I knew it was really easy. I just donated whatever it was, 20, 50 pounds, I don't know, to a charity, and finished the process without really realizing that had happened. So we got in touch with that platform and said, look, you know, this is a position we're in. We're effectively closed right now. I'd love to reopen. Tell me more about open banking. And what I found out straight away is it was going to cost us, you know, at least 90% less than we were paying for cards. It was a really simple process, as I'd experienced, not only for the donor to make that donation, but it was a really simple process for us to onboard the charities. So we need to redo that. We need to re-onboard all of the charities that we'd had previously, but that was going to be pretty straightforward. But the most important thing for me was that the settlement for those charities was also going to be instant. So those are the kind of the key drivers, I think, if we look at open banking and how it compares to, you know, a typical payment made via a debit card or a credit card. It's simple, it's fast, it's super secure. It's probably 90% cheaper, irrespective of who you're using to provide that service. And when you throw Wonderful into the mix in the commercial space, then you're also benefiting charities too.
Mm-hmm. It's a lovely mix. I mean, as you say, serendipity kind of coming to play. It was almost right place, right time, right attitude, right ethos, right skills. There's the moment. It's a real perfect storm, isn't it? I'm fascinated by this thing that you just mentioned there, that there was almost like a resistance or a lack of confidence in some of the early charities because it was for free. That's interesting, isn't it? This kind of, well, nothing comes for free, so where's the catch? That's a very interesting thing. How did you deal with that? Because that's a tricky thing. When you're going into this, it's very heart-led, very kind of value-driven, and yet you kind of get that resistance back. We don't trust you. We don't believe you. It's a tricky one.
It was a tricky one. We'd actually encountered it with the telephone conferencing platform, but at least with that, we could articulate how our revenue model didn't require the customers to pay. So that was an odd one, because we received a very small rebate as a wholesale customer of some of the large carriers for providing that service on an 03 number. So because 03 minutes were included in your bundled minutes with your provider on a mobile phone, suddenly you're dialing into a conference call and it's effectively free because you're just using your bundled minutes. So we're kind of used to that idea of how do we convey this simply to a customer. But with the charities, it was much more difficult because it was genuinely 100% philanthropic. We looked at this and just thought, there's a virtuous circle of people doing amazing things, whether they're donating, so they're being super generous with the cash, whether they're fundraising, giving up time or doing dangerous things, or, you know, really, really passionate about running, but I'm going to run a marathon, which is very different from the 10K I'm used to running, jumping out of airplanes, having the head shaved, as I mentioned, baking cakes, all these people doing great things. And then, of course, charities, if you look at the people operating charities, their raison d'etre is pretty amazing. So we just thought there must be space in the middle of that group of virtuous people for us to join as a platform that's completely free. We looked at corporate sponsorship and thought, well, there's a precedent there. Clearly, corporate sponsors support all sorts of things in the arts, in minority sports, whatever it might be. Here's a really super strong message for a corporate sponsor to get behind this as well. But you're right. I think that, you know, it's not just charities that are a little jaded by those kind of claims and washing, as we call it these days. Is it real? Is this a thing, or are you going to be selling donor data? Or, you know, we had charities saying we're a little concerned that you might be diluting our brand, was a phrase that struck me as really odd for a charity, but genuinely that was one of the responses that we had back. You know, are you just using our brand to kind of, I don't know, bask in the glory of the successes of the charity almost, which seemed kind of odd, but also understandable. You know, I think there was genuinely a bit of skepticism and genuinely a bit of cynicism that we had to overcome.
It's quite sad, isn't it, really, actually, if you take a few steps back and think about that cynicism and, you know, just this kind of almost slightly warped view of, no, somebody's here actually giving you something. And yet the very first reaction, and as you say, it's understandable, but I just find it quite sad. The first reaction is, yeah, well, hold on, there's a catch. We don't believe you. It really is. I mean, it kind of typifies, I guess, the world that we're currently living in. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of angst. There's a lot of, I guess, uncertainty. This kind of an approach, this kind of mindset, the whole kind of wonderful ethos, and it is a wonderful ethos. You must find yourself saying this all the time when you kind of come up with a name like that. It's just, you can just put it everywhere, can't you? That everything is wonderful. Yeah, yeah. But just having that kind of wonderful ethos, just, well, it is so healthy and so transferable across so many other different either fintech platforms or, you know, just areas and sectors of business and everyday living. It's just such a pure kind of entity, that whole philanthropic approach, isn't it? Do you see this kind of playing out elsewhere in the future?
Completely. I mean, it's always nice for us to refer to that virtuous circle, and we do occasionally in presentations present that and show that virtuous circle expanding, literally visually expanding. So, you know, I mentioned that the charities, donors and fundraisers were the starting point. We then kind of snuck into the middle of that virtuous circle as a fundraising platform. But taking this, to have that kind of epiphany somewhere along the process where we thought, hang on a minute, we're solving this significant problem for charities here of getting that cash into their account instantly with no fees. We've also removed the need for a corporate sponsor. Clearly, that problem exists in terms of the expense of moving money elsewhere in the economy, whether that's from a consumer's account to a retailer's account, it's the same process. And that was that moment we thought, hang on, this virtuous circle now extends beyond the fundraising platform, the charities, donors and fundraisers. It now includes retailers and consumers too. Why? Because we have said the one thing that's non-negotiable for as long as Wonderful exists is that charities will always receive services from us completely free of charge. So the more successful the commercial operation, the more charities, donors and fundraisers that we can support. So again, we've kind of encapsulated that in a small tagline, which is, you don't have to run the marathon anymore. You can just buy or sell the trainers and you're still doing something wonderful at checkout. It's not costing you anymore as the consumer and as the retailer. Clearly, you've got all of those advantages of cost savings and simplicity and security.
And it's, again, it's this purity, isn't it, of process, but having this really strong ethos. And, you know, it comes through loud and clear from you, Kieran, as you're kind of talking, there is this kind of real passion, I guess, to change the system, because what you're doing here, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, just from my sort of scant knowledge of fintech, but what you're doing here is potentially rattling some cages, because this flies against a very well-established system. And of course, we've got across the world so many systems like this, which are really entrenched. We've all grown up and, you know, over many, many years kind of understood that this is how things work. And yet somebody like you comes in with a purpose-driven business that is so super simple, but just does what everybody actually in their heart would like to be seeing. This is not going to go down very well, though, is it?
No, you're probably right. I'm sure we are rattling a few cages and upsetting a few people. But it's because I think it's okay to kind of, what's the phrase, earn an honest crust for a fair day's work or something like that. That's the view that we have. We do have costs of delivering the service, but for the first time, open banking has come along as a technology which genuinely offers a real alternative to the status quo. And that's it is the first time it's happened. If you think about that e-commerce environment, you know, up until open banking, what are your alternatives to making that payment? You're not going to post a check to receive your T-shirt. It just isn't practical to do that. You might, for some of those larger transactions, we'll see this get kicked over to do a bank transfer, you know, a typical traditional bank transfer. And that's usually because the merchant wants to save money on the fees. So with those large transactions, they become very, very costly. And I think this is also the key driver for us because it's the first opportunity we've had to turn that into a flat fee per transaction and not a move away from this percentage of the value of the transaction that's, again, it's there, it dominates the landscape for payments. I've always looked at that as being completely unfair. It just doesn't feel right that if it's a charity receiving a donation or a, you know, a small business that's working hard to sell its products, that just to receive the money into their account, they're handing over a percentage of the value of that transaction just feels wrong to me. And it always has. So I think this is a great opportunity now for us to move away from that model and say, yeah, we're going to go to a flat fee per transaction and remove those percentages.
The analogy. I love what I'm hearing here. It's great. Sorry, you were going to say the analogy. Yeah,
so the analogy that I often share with this is, imagine you're posting a check. So let's go back to the days when we were posting checks to people, effectively moving money from one account to another by using Royal Mail. So I'm physically going to get this check to you in another part of the country. Now let's wind the clock forward to today, and that check that you're writing has a value of £75. You'll put a first-class stamp on the envelope, and that'll cost you £1.25. In broad terms, that's what it's going to cost a merchant to process a direct debit transaction, 1.4% plus 20p. So you look at that and you go, okay, well, that seems fair enough. It's going to cost the same as it would cost me to post this check. Here's where it goes wrong, that model. I now take that check out of the envelope, and I write a check for £7,500, pop it back in the envelope. The Royal Mail says, okay, that's great, Kieran. I want a stamp for £105.20 on the envelope now. And for me, that's the fundamental difference and the fundamental failing in that process. It just seems unfair that the merchant, the charity, whoever's been penalized so heavily for, you know, hard-won revenue, hard-won donations. So it's great that this opportunity is emerging for us to allow us to change that.
So the ripple effect then of what you're creating here, it's going to go far and wide. And as you say, it's beyond that initial kind of remit that you gave yourself. And the thing that really fascinates me here is how the system is going to need to respond, because, you know, you will inevitably grow at a rapid rate, and inevitably there will be, you know, a lot of very, very loyal, let's call them customers, who are kind of buying into this as a process. The alternative, which is to go back to this system that takes, as you say, you know, unwieldy amounts of, you know, cost, out of the whole equation, is not value driven. What you're doing is something that's hugely value driven, but the existing system is not value driven. You're not actually paying for something that actually provides any form of value now that you've redefined it. So how do you think we just stay with the banking system, how do you think the banking system is going to respond in terms of needing to find other ways to give value? Because I can imagine them we've seen it with the whole branch network in retail banking, haven't we, over recent years, is just drying up, and you just get all these high street buildings which used to be banks, which are now empty and waiting for new tenants. I mean, it's only going to get more and more and more like that, isn't it? How do you think they're going to react potentially in a positive way?
I think there'll be a huge amount of adaption required, adaptation. They're going to need to change models and look at new sources of revenue and redefine services and what's being provided. Open banking, you know, it does allow banks to earn revenue from providing those services as well, particularly in areas like variable recurring payments. So again, without getting into too much technical detail, you've got different kinds of payments that are being made by using open banking. Single domestic payments are just those one-off transactions. you then have fixed recurring payments, which would be more like a standing order type scenario, so same amount every month. And then a variable recurring payment would be typically, you know, operate very much like a direct debit. However, there's still much more consumer control over that process with a variable recurring payment, because you can set upper limits on what that might be as the consumer, which is great, because, you know, if you're setting that up with somebody who might vary your payments, but you know they shouldn't be doing that over £100 a month, they can't suddenly take £3,000 out of your account. So more control from the consumer, which is great. But from the banks, that's an area where, you know, charges will be made to for fintechs to provide that service. So there'll be some revenue streams from there. But I think it's going to be around that creativity of looking at what product sets and services they're offering their consumers and their clients, and ensuring that there's good value for money.
Yeah, and again, it is that word value, isn't it? I mean, you've clearly established the value that you play in this transaction, all this transactional process, you know, within the charitable sector particularly. I mean, where do you see, if you have a crystal ball, so Kieran's crystal ball to look into the future, maybe, you know, we can't really go too far into the future these days, but maybe 5 years, say, into the future, what's wonderful going to look like in 5 years' time?
Well, our hope is that we've got a significant share of the UK market in terms of payments, certainly open banking payments. We think that there'll be huge benefit for charities, donors and fundraisers in that happening. We have a process in place where we're targeting, certainly in the first instance, small businesses, because we see the benefit really, really key. One of the other areas that is kind of viewed as a strange policy is that we're introducing this on a flat fee per month basis, which is very low. So we're saying 1,000 transactions for £9.99 is where we're at. So basically a penny a transaction. And people say, well, if you're doing that for small businesses, how are you discounting for the larger businesses? And our response is, we don't. You know, if anyone needs a discount right now, particularly in the middle of a cost of living crisis, it's the smaller businesses. So we don't need to discount for bulk. We discount for everybody. And that's going to be, again, pretty squarely in our policy moving forward as a central pillar of it, that it's just that's the price point. There are 5.5 million SMEs in the UK, so we've got a lot of, in inverted commas, low-hanging fruit, a lot of potential users. This goes across not only e-commerce, but into retail environments through POS. Apple announced at the beginning of, middle of January, I think it was, that it's opening up the wallet to third-party payment providers. That becomes another really pivotal point when that happens, because suddenly I can now use this in a contactless environment. Whereas right now, open banking, you know, you'd still probably tap and pay if you were buying a cup of coffee. If you've got a larger transaction, then it's in the merchant's interest, where, you know, it's not so time sensitive in that retail environment to get you to use an open banking method to make that payment, because they're going to save so much money. So we're really focused on, you know, as many of those small businesses as we can get on board as quickly as possible using the service. And that helps, as I mentioned, the charities, donors and fundraisers as well.
I want to point people in the direction of Wonderful, because it's something that I think everybody needs to really be aware of, even if you don't necessarily commit to it right now. But there is just this huge opportunity, and I'm so supportive of, you know, initiatives like this. I mean, this, Kieran, the work that you're doing is really great, and I just love this. And I'll use the phrase again, the cage rattling that you are clearly doing, even though you kind of play it down quite modestly. But I think, you know, what you're doing is quite fundamental within the banking industry. So where do people connect and contact and find out more?
Charitieswonderful.org. So very straightforward. Goes back to my domain name registration days, as you imagine. Been with us a very long time. Finally found a purpose for it that seems to fit the name. And commercial customers, wonderful.co.uk. So again, fairly straightforward.
Thank you so much for your time today, Kieran. It's been really refreshing to get some really good news, because there's a lot of negativity flying around at the moment. And I think, you know, for me, it's just lovely to hear big opportunity, very, very philanthropic, but value driven and challenging the system, which is clearly broken. So well done for your expertise and your sort of passion in this area. And thank you for your time again.
My pleasure, Neil. My pleasure.